So this is the third day of this seven-day retreat here at Southern Dharma Center on Fettering the Natural Mind, the Path of Clear Seeing. Hopefully last night some of you got just a little taste. We had help from the rain and the birds. But hopefully some of you got a little taste of this natural, unfettered mind. That when we unfetter the mind, it is quite delightful. Quite simple and easy. So for the last 2 days, as I said earlier, we have put our practices that we'll be doing here, our meditative practices, in a larger context. A larger context, which is an essential larger context, or else our meditative practice, our mindfulness practice, will really have no meaning, other than kind of a coping mechanism to kind of help us cope with life better. But it will never get at the root causes of human suffering, our own personal suffering, and our inability to really live up to our truest and deepest potential. So as I said yesterday, it is this reflection, not just here, but to get it here, that has to be consistently done so we see clearly through the fog of our own conditioning and our own misperceptions and our own ignorance, so to speak, to really have a clear understanding of what is going on in the world and why things unfold the way they do, and how do I find a meaningful way to live a life, a good life, within the context of ordinary life. And not only be able to live a life that most people would say they want, to have a peaceful mind, an open heart, et cetera, but also to really be of benefit to people. And again, we talked about that yesterday, too. Somebody said yesterday in the sharing that they feel lost. Again, in a certain sense, we're all lost. We're all lost until we find a path. When we find a path and we have direction. But even the idea of being lost is really not accurate. Because even when you're lost, you're somewhere. And so there's no need to panic. When you're lost, you just think you're lost because you're just not where you think you're supposed to be. But you don't know that for a fact. But you are somewhere. And it's good just to stop and be present to wherever you are and to take stock of things before you set off again. So again, the Dharma path is a path that leads us out of the woods, leads us out of confusion, leaves us out of the world of our mental projections, leaves us out of the world of all our self-created dramas and melodramas, leads us out of the world of self, and brings us to a place of real richness and goodness and naturalness, so to speak. And so yesterday we talked, in the last few days, we've talked about cultivating the seed of awakening, the bodhicitta, the bodhisattva way. We've talked about these fundamental reflections on the precious human birth, on the law of cause and effect, on the suffering of human existence. And what's the fourth one? Very good. Again, it's good that we can say them, but again, if they've really gotten into us, Then the struggles we have to practice consistently and to stay with the practice and to be generous and to be energetic, etc., will all be behind us. The energy will flow because we'll know why we're practicing, why we're doing this, and we'll want to do it because we understand that it is a way that gives us real happiness. Even though there are endless distractions and offerings of all kinds of activities that promise us in the short term. Some level of pleasure or satisfaction or happiness, all of them, because of the very nature of experience, are all short-lived. And many of them have the potential to produce the opposite, which is over time the sense of loss, the sense of boredom, the sense of, love turns into hate. I mean, all that nonsense, which is not nonsense when you're experiencing it, of course. It's only nonsense when you are up on the mountaintop or you're flying up at 3,000 feet. It all looks quite insignificant. And that is a true view. But I understand that when one's in it, it has a different flavor to it. But it is important that we find a path in life that gives us this richness and meaning. The thing that I didn't really talk about yesterday, and I won't really talk about today, but it deserves mention, is the other sort of preliminary bases beside the ones I've already talked about, are the four measurables. That if there's any directives, not just in terms of view, but how to conduct ourselves in this life in relationship to others. And again, as human beings, as social beings, we live in relationship to others in many different ways. The four measurables are our guide. Loving kindness, compassion, joy in the joy of others, and an equanimity or an equality of how that is produced in practice. In other words, we share it equally for all beings. We don't just pick and choose who we're going to be nice to today, who we're going to care about today, whose sufferings are important to us and whose we don't really care about. Again, that is all comes from developing, as we developed in a very narrow, constricted, constrained way. As young children, we come from a very innate kind of narcissism. The young child only thinks about themselves. And parents are quite delighted when at a certain point they seem to be concerned about others. It is empathy, compassion, loving kindness. These are things that develop over time, and they are often in direct conflict with self-centeredness. Most people demand understanding, compassion, loving kindness, etc., etc., from everybody else and how they treat me. We want the world to be like that for me. But we somehow don't get it that somehow we're supposed to be that way for everyone else. But again, that cultivation of the four measurables, which is really a kind of a path of selflessness, where one is as concerned, if not more concerned, with the well-being of others than oneself, and that, ameliorating the suffering of others, being kind, being friendly to others, gives one great joy and happiness oneself. That is only something that you can learn by living that way. So, please don't forget the four measurables. So now we are turning closer to the subject at hand for this retreat. In Buddhism, going back to the Buddha himself, and through all the masters, but especially in these great practice lineages of the Zen tradition and of the great perfection tradition, these practices where awakening is the primary focus of the path. because it is the mind of human beings, because it is the mind of sentient beings, in which everything arises, happiness, joy, loving kindness, compassion, understanding, patience, sadness, anger, jealousy, fear, despair, impatience, frustration, etc., etc. All those mind states arise in the mind. Altruism arises in the mind. Self-centeredness arises in the mind. The I thought, the me and mine thought, arises in the mind. Thoughts arise in the mind. Perceptions arise in the mind. Emotions arise in the mind. Memories arise in the mind. You get it? So the mind, understanding the mind, is the key point of the practice tradition. That is why, in these practice traditions, meditation is the core practice. It doesn't mean what we've already done, sort of the analytical way of looking at life, the practices in generating compassion and loving kindness, etc. Practicing generosity and patience and all these wonderful things are not part of the path. But the key, the heart, is understanding the nature of mind. And because meditation is an introspective process, that's why we're here. That's why we practice meditation. Because it is the technology that allows us to reverse the process. The process that we have been involved in for the decades we have been alive is primarily the process of being focused out there. Looking at the objects that appear to the eyes and the nose and the mouth and the ears and all the senses, and generating lots of thoughts and emotions and perceptions and etc. around all that we see and perceive out there. But we have never stopped to look at that very instrument that is perceiving all that. Right? Which seems so obvious. Right? Maybe there's something wrong with the projector. You know? Right? I mean, if you know, up there, things were all blurry, you know, would the technician be running up and kind of touching the screen and trying to get it, right? Right? We would say, that's crazy, isn't it? That's not where the problem is. Right? Right, I mean, if up on the screen something was happening that you didn't like some character or something, you know, would you stand up in the theater and start yelling at them? Jane, stop doing that. You know, we're focused on that. So we want to begin to attend to the projector, that which is putting all these shadows and light up on the screen of the mind, all these projections. We want to understand the nature of our mind, the nature of projections, the nature of thoughts. Is that clear? It is only through that way that liberation comes. Mindfulness will not liberate us. Concentration will not liberate us. It has been the truth of Buddhism for 2,600 years that only insight that cultivates wisdom, which means understanding the nature of reality, which is the nature of one's own mind, the nature of phenomena, that is the path to liberation. Does anybody disagree with me? Let's get it straight right now. I mean, I say that if people, anybody doesn't see that. Does that mean you're just struck dumb or you are actually in agreement? You're in agreement. I just need a little confirmation that people just don't think that's the stupidest thing they ever heard and they just can't believe he's up there going on this way. So today we are in day 3 of retreat. As you know, for those who've been on retreat before, day 7 is a half day, and the Dharma talk is more focused on post-retreat practice, and we have closing circle, etc. So basically, 3, 4, 5, 6. We basically have 4 now good solid days to make this our focus. To investigate the mind. To investigate the things that arise in the mind, such as thoughts, feelings, and perceptions, and memories. And to learn another way. The path of clear seeing, the path of the natural mind. But before we get there, we need to understand the unnatural mind, the conditioned mind. And again, our understanding, if it's just intellectual or conceptual, will not be helpful. It'll only become helpful through the practice of meditation. Is that clear? This is very important to understand. Just because you get it intellectually, it's the same way that we talked about with the 4 mind turnings. We get it intellectually, but if you're still impatient with situations, you're still impatient with people, you still have lots of anger and hurt and all kinds of stuff about people and the way they are, you don't understand the law of cause and effect, do you? If you still have a problem with the way you are, you don't understand the law of cause and effect. Right? Is that clear? Right? If you still fritter away your time on nonsense or just things that are fairly meaningless, you don't understand the preciousness of human life and the great gift that we have been given. If you're still running out of, if you're still running after the trinkets, the temporary pleasures of life, you don't understand the inherent unsatisfactoriness of it all. You don't see the hook in the bait, you only see the bait. And the bait always looks what? Fisherman? The bait always looks what? Yeah, fake bait, right? Fisherman, I mean, this guy, I remember being with a guy that's fly fishing. Seemed like he was spending half his life making all these little things. Why was he making them? So it would look attractive to the fish. So he could what? Hook them. Right? You got an industries out there, a whole industry of advertising and marketing that is just working very hard, right? To create very attractive bait for each and every one of us. Why? So they can hook us. Right? So we'll purchase, so we'll consume. That's what's going on. if you understand, if you've looked deeply into the things we've talked about, you will not be fooled. You'll be that smart fish. Who sees it? Oh, I know that. It's that same stupid fly fisherman up there. Who's he trying to fool? Right? Who's he trying to fool? It's only the stupid fish that get caught. The same way, if we really reflected deeply on impermanence, we will not be dismayed. We will not be afraid of. We will not be saddened by the changes that are going on in life within ourselves and everyone else. We will have deep understanding. Is that clear? So you will know that you don't have to do these contemplations anymore when you've realized the fruits of this contemplation. You'll have understanding, which is different than intellectual understanding. Here we call this knowing, to know something. So, this is another area where those of you who've been around me for a while, for years, may go, oh no, he's not going to do this one again. Not investigating the mind, looking for the mind, looking. I've done that before. Right? Like Brian's over there going, God, I was hoping to hear something new this time. Pulls out the same old stuff. See, that's our problem. Right? It's a new TV season. We want a new program, don't we? Right? We want a new Pop 40 song. The one from 3 months ago, you know. See, we are addicted to this sense of newness, to wanting to be entertained, right? That's why our Dharma bookshelves keep growing. I mean, we have a library at our center now. It's really wonderful. It just gets so many books. You can see people are just, eventually their Dharma bookshelf or their self-help shelf gets so filled and they keep buying books that they have to start giving away ones, you know, to make more room. And then luckily we now have a library, so there's a place that they can bring them. But as our master Pachu Rinpoche said, need more teachings. We haven't mastered the first one. So, again, when you have really understood the nature of your mind, you will no longer be fooled by the phenomena that arises in it. You will no longer have issues. Right, Charlie? You will no longer have issues. For those of you who thinks it's normal to have issues, and to always be working through issues. Can you imagine a life without issues? You won't have issues anymore. You won't have dramas anymore. You won't have emotional afflictions anymore. That'll all be gone. That's the truth. And that comes from understanding the nature of the mind, thoughts. And so this is good. This is deep. Just because you get it intellectually does not mean you get it. You'll know you get it when you're free. Right? When you understand a dream is just a dream, they will no longer affect you, will they? If you think dreams are real, they will affect you. Is that right? Right. Oftentimes, teachers will refer to this waking world of ours as it is like a dream, right? This dream-like existence. Right? When we are in a dream, it seems real, doesn't it? Right? Last night, everybody here, most of you may have had dreams. In your dream, this happened and that happened. In your dreams, you had all your senses. You had your sense of self. I mean, it was all even though things are a little strange, because it is a dream. So it is not constrained by the physical reality. It is a total mental event. Last night in your dream, it all appeared real and solid, and there was a self, and those were feelings, and there were senses, and the whole deal, right? No matter what the nature of the dream, have you noticed that when you wake up, it's gone? Right? It's gone. And almost like whatever you were feeling in the dream is gone too. Well, that's something to investigate. And we accept that, don't we? That last night's dreams were just dreams, and now that we're awake, we just go on. Is that true? I mean, how many dreams do you think you've had in your life? I'm sure there are researchers who have noticed. I mean, I don't know. How many dreams do you think you've had in your life?
10,000.
10,000, that's a good number. So you've had 10,000 dreams. Have you stored them up somewhere, and do you take them out? Do you remember them? Is your emotional life affected by all the dreams you've had?
Yes.
They are. How is that?
When I wake from a dream, the emotions are still arising.
For you, they are. And then what happens?
Okay.
How long does it take them to pass if you don't do anything with them? How long? If you don't think about it, and if you don't in any way are attached to it, and you just have a feeling that's a kind of a residue from the dream is over, how long, again, if you don't do anything, how long does the feeling last?
Hours.
Hours for you. Okay, and then what happens? Okay. So even for someone who is still very affected by the dream, within a few hours they pass without any residue. Because they have no existence, permanent existence. All you're feeling is just the effects of. Right? Is that clear? And your dream was a mental event. Is that clear? Right? It wasn't physically. You weren't actually physically doing whatever you were dreaming. Right? It was all going on in your imagination. That's what dreams are, right? I mean, yes or no? Well, we don't know about brains and fire. That's something we've read. But your experiences, they're happening in your mind. Right? I mean, where are they happening? They're happening in your mind. And whatever, it's a total mental event. I mean, in the sense that you're not actually physically doing it. If you're dreaming you're climbing a mountain, you're not physically actually with this body climbing a mountain, are you? Okay, it's just a mental event. It's an imaginary. It's a fantasy. And yet, there's a full range of emotions and all that. It's a mental event. Now, how is that mental event different than all your other mental events that you've had in your life? No different. And yet, we decide some are important and we hold on to them. Years, decades, half a lifetime, right? What's the difference? What's the difference between last night's dream and the dream of your childhood? Please reflect on that, since we seem to think there is a big difference, don't we? So, I have two teachings related to this searching for the mind. Again, realization is different than intellectual knowing. When you have realization, there is a deep understanding and it is transformative. You get it. When you get it, you'll know it because things will be different. The process of going from intellectual understanding to practicing to realization is a process. Is that clear? It is a process. Please enter the process with joyful effort and diligence. But it is a process. It has to occur consistently over time that we can break through our habitual way of thinking, perceiving, believing. That historical stuff within us is very strong. And little effort here and a little effort there will not break one out of it. That's why it's so wonderful, especially with these kinds of practices, to come to retreat where one can be consistent, right? Often in our daily life, it is more difficult because we are very active with other things and we may find it difficult to maintain that consistency. That is why retreat is very precious, not to be wasted. So I have two little texts. One is teachings from the third Dzogchen Rinpoche Pith Instructions in Dzogchen. I found it on the internet, taken from the book Great Perfection, Volume 2, Separation and Breakthrough. And the other is Dharma songs by another great Tibetan teacher, Shapka. I'm not sure the dates of Dzogchen. I don't think he's too many centuries ago. Shapka was 19th century. I think he died in the late 1800s. A modern-day master, considered a great, considered an emanation of Milarepa, many of you know, and also a very unusual master in Tibet, because he was a fierce vegetarian in a world where meat eating went on morning, noon, and night, just in, not only in the lay community, but also in the monastic community. And his writings on meat eating and the path of compassion are quite wonderful and have been translated. So I have two teachings, and we'll kind of maybe go back and forth and see what happens. Again, in this Dharma talk, I'm just going to be explaining, but this is what we'll be practicing today and tomorrow. Again, these kind of teachings on the mind are very traditional. So even though these are two different teachers, didn't know each other or anything, I don't know that, I could be wrong. You'll see a similarity in approach and in process. Okay. Let me start with Shapka. It's a little more personal. He says, "Now listen further, all my best beloved sons and daughters." That's you. "No matter what system of mind training you practice," so again, you can be a Zen person, a Vipassana person, a Dzogchen person, a Christian, a Jew, a Muslim, a humanist, or you can be whatever you want. "No matter what system of mind training you practice, unless you realize the nature of your mind, severing its root, you miss the point of the great perfection. The errant aspirant, blind to this imperative, is like the archer who places his target to the front, only to shoot off the arrow in the other direction. Like the householder who searches outside for a thief that is still in their house. Like the exorcist who sets his spirit trap at the west door when the demon actually lives at the east door. Like the poor man who begs blind to their hearthstone of gold." Okay. "Therefore, my beloved children, you who wish to resolve life's frustrations and anxieties by the direct method of discovering the nature of mind, examine your minds in the following way." Now, the Dzogchen Rinpoche writes, "Searching for mind. Concerning these unique instructions, we now arrive at the threefold mental preliminary practice." He's much more matter-of-fact. "On this topic, the Tantra of penetrating sound explains, where does the mind come from? Where does it stay? Where does it go? If these three questions are investigated, the mind will be trained and its true nature understood. Just so we're all in the same ballpark, what we are referring to when we talk about the mind, that which is listening right now, that which is seeing right now, that which is thinking right now, that is what's feeling right now, this is your mind. It's this. Is that clear? It's nowhere else but here. This is your mind. Everything that you are aware of, all the processes that you are aware of, including receiving the data from your senses, is all coming to you by benefit of your mind. This is your mind. It can't get any closer than this, can it? So this is how wonderful this is, because what you're having to investigate, you don't have to go anywhere to do. It's always with you. It's with you here in the Dharma Hall. It's with you when you're walking around. It's with you when you're eating. It's with you when you're in your bed. It's with you when you're in the bathroom, right? No matter where you are always with your mind. So investigating it, again, means that instead of focusing out there, you are now focusing on your mind. You're investigating your mind. Does everybody kind of get the terrain? Like, I can see Spence's over there thinking. Spence? It is your mind that is thinking. That which is thinking is your mind. Okay? So we're going to investigate that which is thinking, which is hearing, which is seeing. Okay? We want to go, what is this? Okay? Therefore, my beloved children, if you wish to resolve life's frustrations and anxiety by the direct method of discovering the nature of mind, examine your minds in the following way. What we call mind, and this is in quotations, is an insistent chatterer, hopping, skipping, and jumping about. Now do you know what we're talking about? Oh, I just want to get... For those of you who think you're unique... please understand this yogi up in the mountains of Tibet was watching the same thing. What we call mind is an insistent chatterer, hopping, skipping, and jumping about. Try to catch it, and it slips away, changing shape or vanishing. Attempt to focus it, and it will not be still. Proliferating and scattering. Try to pin it with a label, and it resolves into unutterable emptiness. But it is the same mind that experiences the gamut of human feelings, and it is this mind that must be scrutinized. Is that clear? This mind that you have endlessly tried to cope with, control, manipulate, change, tame, all to no avail or little avail. It is this mind that we're going to scrutinize so we can understand it. When we understand it, we know how to work effectively with it. Thank you. So has anybody here ever done research, investigated something? Anybody be an investigator? Good. When you investigate, don't you have to have a question? Right? Aren't you? Right. There's a question. There have to be questions that are guiding your investigation. Right? So the investigation into the mind involves questions. Right? That's the kind of, that's the nub that drives the investigation. We have questions that we are seeking answers to. Right? So for those of you who have that kind of mind, you'll enjoy this. Except this, the investigation is not, in this case, intellectual. So for those who are used to intellectual investigation, this is not that. This is experiential, right? You got to get off your butt, so to speak. Is that clear? Right. It's not like you can, it's as if you heard that sound, and there may be somebody here who goes, oh, I know, that's a bird, must be sitting in a tree, I know that sound, it's a, anybody know what kind of bird it is? It's a what? I don't know, it's a mockingbird, and they're such and such a color, and above, you know what I mean? So that's kind of a lazy investigator, right? They have a question, but immediately they think up an answer. But that's not real, the investigation. This is the investigation where you what? You get up, you go out in the woods, you track it down, and when you see it, right, then you know, oh, it is that bird. It's not what you thought. Your thinking may have been right, conceptually, but you really don't know until you see it. Is that clear? So in this case, it's not just thinking it. So when we ask a question, and you'll be hearing soon about the questions, you have to use the question to investigate your mind until you come up with an answer based on your direct investigation of. Just stay with me. Okay. Now, coming back to Dzogchen Rinpoche, he says to start, investigate the mind's point of origin. The factor that we refer to as awareness, quote-unquote, and mind, quote-unquote, is in constant motion like the wind. But what is this mind that experiences all forms of happiness and suffering? Where does this shifting awareness come from? Does the mind come into being from a point of existence or non-existence? Does it arise from appearances or from emptiness? Does it originate in the external universe or the beings that inhabit it? Over here with Shapka Rinpoche, he says, first, what is the origin of this mind? Is it a function of external phenomena? Mountains, rocks, waters, trees, celestial breezes? Or is it independent of them? Asking yourself where mind comes from, investigate this possibility thoroughly. Alternatively, consider whether or not the mind originates from reproductive fluids of our parents. If so, inquire into the process by which it emerges. Continue this inquiry until it is exhausted and you truly know whether the mind has an origin or not. And over here he says, you may wonder whether or not the mind arises from some particular thing made up of the four external elements. Fire, water, that's where they looked at things then. If you look for such a thing, however, you will find that you can break everything down into tiny parts. In the end, you won't find anything. You may get the idea that it arises from inside your body. Search through every part of your body, through your head, each of its limbs. Can you find it anywhere? On the other hand, if you think that it arises from a state of emptiness, can you find some place that it arises from? Yet if it comes into existence from appearances, what do you actually observe? All right. So we begin with this idea that I would say most people would agree with, unless they've been working these questions for many years. Most people would say, I'll ask Spence, he's a businessman, he's very practical. And I'd say, Spence, do you have a mind? And Spence would say, what?
So.
Yeah, he's being a little cautious. No, I mean... I know, you don't want to walk into the trap, all right. But again, we talk this way, right? I mean, if I said to you, Spence, do you have a mind? Spence would say yes. Right? Right. And if I said, Spence, does your mind exist? And Spence would say what?
Sure.
Sure, yeah, I have a mind. Of course it exists. It exists and it thinks and it feels and it remembers. It's a wonderful thing, right? This mind of ours, okay. It's a pretty wonderful thing, right? Yeah, it's a thing. So, because as it was said earlier, this mind is the source of all our happiness and all our suffering, we need to know what it is, right? So, you can see with these questions, you want to begin to look into sort of where does this mind come from? So if I asked you, Spence, you'd say, so where did this mind come from, Spence? It just appeared. Really? What? I mean, it just appeared for you, you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, it appeared when I was born, I guess, or when I was conceived.
Where was it before you were born?
It was up in the ether somewhere.
So you would say that your mind came from outside in the ether, and when you were born, somehow got inside you and became your mind. Well, hold on, that's what you just said. I'm just repeating back to you. So you think the mind, this mind of yours, this wondrous thing, was kind of out there in the ether and somehow at birth entered you and became you. So you think, okay, that's interesting. Any other ideas about where the origin of the mind was? Your mind. This mind right now that feels, that thinks, that listens, where did it come from? What is its origin? Do you remember a time when you didn't have it? Do you remember a time when you didn't have it? No. Well, that's interesting. Do you remember a time when it turned on? Like it wasn't there and all of a sudden it turned on. Is it your experience? I mean, if it came from the ether, was it like an entity that kind of just popped in? Because if it came from the ether, then it would still sort of be part of the ether. And if it's part of the ether, and I have the same thing, do you know what's going on in my mind? Because we all got it from the same ether, right?
Sometimes we try to
Right, but I'm asking you, if we all have the same mind that comes from the same ether, and you and I got it from the same ether, can you read my mind? Do you know what's going on inside me? No. What is the origin of my mind? This mind right now. Did it come from something outside myself? Did it come from the ether? He says here, did it come from the mountains, the streams, the sky? Did it come from my parents? Was it in their blood and semen, this awareness? Where did it come from? What is the source? What is the origin of this mind? You don't know. Do you believe there has an origin?
You mean the concept of no life, no evil?
I'm not talking concept. I'm talking about this mind. Right? This mind right now that you're experiencing. Did it have an origin? What was its origin? Just look into your mind. Can you see where it began? What?
No, I can't see where it began. It's always been there.
Hold on. Stop. It's always been there. That would mean it had no beginning. It had no origin. Is that what you're saying? I mean, you're the investigator. You see, it can't. The answer can't be perhaps.
So perhaps, maybe it was a universal consciousness.
Well, hold on. Now you're thinking about what's out there. I'm asking you to look into your mind. You don't have to think, right? You have the object of your investigation right here. See, you don't have to think anything. It's right here. This mind, right now, right here, does it, when you look into it, can you see where it began?
No,
when you look into it, what do you see?
It's just there.
What's going on? Just look at it. Hold on. Stop. Just stop it. Just stop and investigate. When you look into your mind, what do you see right now? Everybody else do it too. What do you see right now when you look directly into your mind? Go on. Keep going. So when you look into your mind, directly into your mind, what do you see? What's your direct experience right now? It is empty. There you go. Well, that's interesting. A minute ago you said, oh, it's all this stuff going on, back and forth, actually. But when you actually stopped and looked right at it, it's empty, isn't it? Well, that's interesting. Just stay there. Just stay there. Just rest, relax. There's nothing there, is there? I'm going to push you a little further, Spence. We're just getting ahead of ourselves. Spence, you said earlier that you have a mind, right? When you look into that which you're calling your mind, do you see a thing called a mind? Spence?
No.
So therefore you would have to say, do you have a thing called a mind? Spence? Based on your empirical investigation?
No, when I look very deeply into it, it's not there.
There's nothing there. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? This mind is more amazing than you ever believed, isn't it? Just rest in that. Relax. Now, any issues back there? Any problems to work on? Spence? No. Well, that's interesting too, isn't it? Carol, you had your hand raised earlier. What?
I must have been out of it.
Good.
Probably
say. Well, you don't have to say it. I mean, you don't. I mean, if it's not worth saying, don't say it. Anybody else look into their mind for the origin of their mind? Bill, you're nodding your head. Yeah. So what did you when you looked at this thing that we believe exists? And has an origin. You know, it has, you know, if it's a thing, it had to begin somewhere and be here and end here, right? I mean, that's just the way we define a thing, right? So if it's a thing, an entity, it had to begin somewhere and now it's present and one day it'll go, right? But when you look at it, is that really the way it is?
No.
No.
It exists, but I can't find it.
Well, that's kind of strange. It exists, but you can't find it. You're an investigator. Isn't that what you do for a living?
Yes.
I don't think anybody would pay you if you came back from the investigation. So. Well, it happened, but I really have no idea how it happened, you know. That's not what they're paying you for, is it?
Just a little trouble.
Oh, no, this is easier, because you don't have to go anywhere. It's right here. But I like what you said. I can't find a trace of it. It doesn't exist, and yet something's going on, right? Something's going on. It doesn't. That is why these phrases, such as you get in Buddhist sutras, you get in the in the Heart Sutra. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form is not other. Emptiness is not other than form. Form is not other than emptiness. That's why in Buddhism you often get things like, it neither exists, nor does it neither not exist. And that's beyond logic. But it's really describing, yeah. There's no trace of it existing, and yet to say it doesn't exist is not true either, because there is something. Right? Something seems to know, something is moving your head, right? As if you agree. You know what I'm saying? So there is something, but it's not a thing. It has no shape, no color, no sound, no origin. Does it? Well, that's interesting. Anybody else looking into their mind? Besides Spence and Bill, any women looking into their mind? June? Have you been looking into your mind? It's blank. Is it really blank? Yeah, but stop, that's interesting. See, blank is kind of dull and numb. You know what I mean? Blank. Is your mind really like that? Or is it alive? It's alive. But it is empty. Empty of anything solid or permanent. It's empty of thingness, isn't it? And yet, it's alive, isn't it? Very alive. How, when you experience that, how does it feel? It's peaceful. Did you have to work very hard to make your mind peaceful just now? Okay, but it's interesting. Many of us think, oh, to get a peaceful mind, I got to do this practice and that practice. I got to really subdue my thoughts. I got it right. You know, it's like a lot of work to get a peaceful mind. Right, but when you got there and looked into it, immediately you were peaceful. Just like Spence, right? You became peaceful, didn't you? And you didn't have to tamper down your thoughts or struggle or, you know, do mindfulness. You know what I mean? I got to, you know, like most of us, my mind's all agitated. I gotta get back on the mat and start breathing, right? You know what I mean? It's like, you know what I mean? I mean, most of us, we think we this, you know, there's a technology we got to use to develop a peaceful mind. But you're saying if you just look into the mind and to look, just look right at its nature, you see it already is peaceful. Right? Anybody else have that experience? You know, they talk about the water and the waves, the ocean, the waves, right? The movement is all on the top. As soon as you go down a couple of feet, peaceful. You don't have to tamp down the waves, do you? Just have to go down a few feet. Peaceful. Anybody have a scuba dive? Or a snorkel? Yeah. That's, there it is. You know, there can even be 6-foot waves up here, right? Well, usually they don't want you to scuba in those kind of waves. But anyhow, you know, just go down. Peaceful. Any other experiences? Nobody else? Yes. Anybody have a bad experience? I mean, please don't. This is not like, you know, a lot of times I think people, they're conditioned by being in school. You know, you only want to answer. You know, raise your hand if you're sure you got the right answer. You don't want to be embarrassed, you know. This is not like that. This is about liberation. We want to be embarrassed. Yes.
I have a question. So last night when you had us listen to the rain and then you guided us, I think this is the right way to describe it, to notice the stillness underneath, and that was the awareness. Right? You used the word awareness there, but the stillness underneath. And then today in the reading, we were talking where the question was, look at the mind, which is the incessant chatterer going all around. Mm-hmm. And that could be like the illusory ego. I mean, I'm not trying to theorize here. But
well, you are theorizing. So you are theorizing.
I'm not sure if we're supposed to be talking, if we're talking about the same thing.
Okay.
When we talk about the incessant chattering mind or awareness, we talked last night about the stillness awareness.
Okay.
What I'm looking for right now, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. Again, it's only one mind. Okay? It's only one mind. And just like right now, we can have chattering mind, but as soon as we look more deeply into the mind itself, immediately it can become still. Last night, instead of, let's say, chattering thoughts, there was chattering birds or chattering raindrops, right? And what we learned was there can be chattering raindrops, lots of noise and going at quite rapidity, but yet the mind can be very relaxed and open and aware, right? And not have to be the same as that moving mind. They are concurrent. In the same way, the ocean can have waves and yet in its depth be unmoved. And yet we don't say that the waves and the ocean are two different things, right? Are they? No. The waves are what? The surface. The surface of the ocean. And at the surface of the ocean, again, I am not a scientist. I mean, the waves are caused by wind and current, you know, right? I mean, there are conditions that are causing that. What? And the moon. And forgive me for forgetting the moon. But anyhow, there are kind of physical conditions that are causing the what?
The waves are caused by wind.
The waves are caused by wind. Okay, so. So, but anyhow, there are causes and conditions that are causing the surface of the water to move, right? But yet, in the depths of the ocean, there isn't that movement, is there? The ocean is still. Donna likes to argue. Donna, yes. Say it.
Well, you can get lost if you're scuba diving. You can get lost in the current.
It's
all water.
Right, it's all water. So there are currents. So there are some currents in the depth. But just, you have to remember these analogies were developed thousands of years ago in India. You know, they didn't have the advantage of really seeing that even in the depths of the water there is movement. So forgive them. But you get the point. You're getting seasick. So is that, it's like that, you see. At the same time, the mind, it could be chattering. That is just a little part of the mind that is chattering. The mind is much larger and vaster than the chattering. In the same way that one can hear the ping, 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 ping of the rain, and the mind can be very still and aware, and not in any way, the ping, ping, pinging is not disturbing us in any way, is it? Is that true, Bill?
That's true.
You're looking a little.
No, I'm looking.
Okay, good. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
What is actually investigating the mind? I mean, if there's only one mind, how can the mind investigate the mind? I've been through this exercise before, and that's something that comes up from each time.
What? Go on.
I've been through this exercise before.
Uh-huh.
So I've struggled with that, idea. What is it exactly that's investigating?
Good. And that's a very good question. After the section on the first searching for the origin of the mind, Dzogchen Rinpoche writes, okay, Joe? In short, investigate the mind that you are searching for, right? And then turn your attention back to the mind that is doing the searching. That's your question. You will then behold the mind in its original state and see that it has no identifiable essence at all. Until this has come to pass, you should repeat this process of examination over and over again. So to answer your question, right? The understanding does not stop with coming to the conclusion. I mean, that's a good start, that the mind does not exist as a separate entity. It's not a thing. It has no origin, etc., etc. But the obvious end question is, the obvious next question is, well, what is it that knows this? What is it that's asking the question, right? That's what you're asking, Joe. Good. So that's after you finish the other, you then turn and look directly into the investigator, the one who is asking the question. What is that? Is there such a thing, you know, as the investigator, the watcher, the observer? What is that? What is its nature? When you look into that, what do you see, Joe?
I personally experience that.
What?
I personally experience a watcher, an observer, watching the mind.
Okay.
Something that comes up for me is, and what then is observing the observer?
Yeah. Okay, so in this practice, you know, now we're jumping ahead a little bit, but good. No, that's fine, because it's all part of the process. It's interesting. In the Zen tradition, it's very simple. In the Great Perfection Tradition, it's much more elaborated. So they have a series, as you can see, they have a series of many questions. Well, in the Zen, it's more like, what is this? You know, and that's like, no matter what it is, what is this? So again, you would keep working it, right? You'd keep working, looking into that which is asking the question, that which is observing, right? What is that? What is that? And look right at it. Until you come to the end of your questioning and you know the answer. Okay? And for me to give you the answer would not benefit you at all. Right? Because as realization comes from your own work. Right? But this is what it means when we talk about, you know, looking into the mind. Right? And obviously, that which is looking into the mind is either part of the mind or it's another mind, you know, right? What is it? So, anybody getting excited by these questions? Yeah, I mean, this is what we're doing here. And we'll be doing this over a number of days, and this is really the heart of the practice. Because it's getting at the very source of, you know, for most of us, right, Charlie, we're always dealing with our issues. We're always dealing with ourself. We're always dealing with our emotions. We're always dealing with our memories. We're always dealing with our childhood experiences and our traumas. And we're always dealing with God knows what, right? And yet we never have looked deeply into all these things with the question, what are they? What is a mind? What is awareness? What is a thought? What is a memory? What is an emotion? And I'm not talking about a description, you know, in a book, but from your own deep looking into. And again, this is so easy because it's all right here. And you're only looking into your experience. The only difficulty is what? We're not used to it because we're always externalized our whole life. Two, we've always concretized our thoughts, our feelings, our perceptions as mind as solid things that have real inherent, right? And three, we're lazy. I'd much rather read the book. Or Fred, can't you tell us? We're lazy, right? Spence goes, oh, good. What? Just tell me, can't you? Just give me the answer.
There's this saying that ultimate truth can't be necessarily known by the rational mind. And the question, what is it? The knowing of the knowledge of that is more experiential, and you don't necessarily work from the rational point of view to
look very carefully. Now, what is in this?
Tea.
Good. It's tea. Okay. Do you know what it tastes like?
More or less.
Why do you say more or less? Well, even if I told you what flavor, the only thing you could say when you say, oh, I know what that is because you have a what?
Memory.
A memory. You have a memory, right? You have a memory. A memory is just a mental fabrication, right? If you want to know what this is experientially, which means as a real experience, I mean, let's not make this too philosophical. We're talking about direct experience, life. This is life, right? Right? So if Donna says, Fred, can I have a cup of tea? And I say, oh, Donna, just imagine you're drinking one. Right? You know, you say, right, oh, English breakfast. Can I have some of yours? No, just kind of imagine. You remember what English breakfast tea is like, right? You've drunk it. Right? Just imagine your cup and just imagine you're drinking it. Right? Leave me alone. Right. And yet, in truth, it would not be as meaningful as actually drinking a real cup of tea, would it? Right? I mean, would you be satisfied if I said, well, just imagine yourself drinking a cup of tea right now?
No.
Right, okay. So we should not be satisfied with intellectual understanding. It is ultimately not the same as, you know. I mean, realization, that's all it means. Oh, you know. See, there are no words for that. That is just that. To say English breakfast tea, what does that mean? Just more description. But we could never put that into words. Right? Somebody here is a poet. Where's the poet, right? You could try, right? You could wordsmith. But no word could ever... I mean, what do words have to do with the experience? See, if you hear that, right, we would say what? Just labeling it, we would call that what? Rain. Right? And then we could become more descriptive, and a poet might say what? A poet might say what? 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 The pitter-patter. It's not rain, it's a pitter-patter. And over there, Ken is going, it's what?
10,000 little hands applauding.
10,000 little hands applauding. I mean, little did I know he had it in him. Anybody else? Let's just do this.
The scientist says precipitation.
Precipitation. There you go. It's just precipitation.
The tears of the gods.
The tears of the gods. The chatter of the clouds. And yet, what does any of that have to do with that? Just listen. Find the exact word to describe that sound. How you doing? Anybody in this room have a PhD? Raise your hand. All right, we'll start with you. You've had more words thrown at you. What is that?
I have a PhD in climatology.
Oh, no. I'm just saying you're highly educated. That's all I'm referring to. Highly educated. And yet, what is the word that accurately describes that?
Now.
What?
Now.
But again, that's just... What does that mean? Nothing. Right? But it is what's going on now. And the only way somebody else would understand that is they have to experience it. So, I don't like the word now, but what I prefer, Joe, is that. or this. Boom. It's just this. This is just this. Right? If you want somebody to know what the rain sounds like, you come have them listen. Right? If you want someone to know what English breakfast tea tastes like, you give them a cup of tea. Then they have the experience. So in our investigation, we want the experience, the knowing. Many of us are quite satisfied with intellectual, conceptual understanding. Didn't Pacha Rinpoche say something about having the dance manual does not necessarily make you a good dancer? In short, investigate the mind that you are searching for and then turn your attention back to the mind that is doing the searching. You will then behold the mind in its original state and see that it has no identifiable essence at all. Until this has come to pass, you should repeat this process of examination over and over again. Shabka Rinpoche says, continue this inquiry until it is exhausted and you admit the mind has no origin. So the origin of the mind. What is mind? Where is mind? Where's your mind, by the way, Spence? Is it in your elbow?
No, it's not the...
Where is your mind?
It's it.
Where is it? Does it have a location? So you said its characteristic is emptiness, but does it have a location? Where is it located?
It seems like it's up here, but sometimes it's...
I mean, what knows?
Sometimes it's a thousand miles.
Oh, it can go outside, inside. It can be out there listening to the rain, hearing the rain on the leaves. It seems to be...
It can travel.
It travels about this mind. So, you know, does it have a place where it dwells? Does it have a dwelling place, this mind of ours? Does it have a beginning? Does it have an end? Does it have a shape? Does it have a color? This must be known. And you do it by investigation. Through mindfulness and concentration, you quiet and calm the mind. When the mind is quiet and calm, you then look into it. You use these questions. And you can do that not only when you're in the meditation hall, you can do it when you're walking about or when you're eating, if you want. You taste something. Delicious. What is saying that? What is that? Is that your mind that says it's delicious? What is that? And if it's my mind, again, what is it? What is a mind? Does it have a shape? Is it a thing? Again, this mind is the source of everything in our life. We need to know it. Yes.
Sometimes
always thought my mind, heart and mind, was located in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a severe stroke,
mm-hmm.
severe hematoma,
mm-hmm.
I'm a vegetable and I don't have a mind anymore.
How do you know that? You don't have a mind, or you don't have what? Thoughts, or you don't have memories? What don't you have?
Well, thanks God, I was never in that position, but that's what...
But this is a different question, you see. Yeah.
If one is just lying there...
So Thich Nhat Hanh had a stroke, right?
Yep.
He had a severe hematoma, right? He had a severe stroke. He has no language. People say he primarily has just been lying there. Or they get him up and he's sitting there. Now he's moving about a little bit. What do you think's going on with him?
Maybe the mind is slowly coming back.
Hold on. When you say the mind, are you talking some functions? We're talking more than function. Spence, when you looked into your mind, you weren't talking about function, were you? You were talking about an experience of what? Yeah. Awareness. Yeah. Be careful, you. Be careful. You're speaking for him.
The mind is empty. The mind is empty of a separate existence. I was going to ask you about that. About that being, you know,
tomorrow's another day. We got enough on our plate today. Yeah, but again, yeah. If you lost your thinking ability, would that mean you are no longer aware?
What if I lose my awareness?
How could you lose this? Where could you lose this?
Well, I think you could lose...
Hold on, you're thinking.
Through a severe stroke, you could lose all awareness. You are in a coma.
Is a person in a coma totally unaware, or is it just... Is that true? Is that really true? Is that true, June? No, it's not true, is it? What happens to someone when they're in a coma?
Mm-hmm. But sometimes they
do
have certain reactions.
Right. I mean, there's a certain non-reactivity, right, to stimulation in life, but it doesn't mean that there's no awareness. Right?
But the reaction isn't awareness. To equate reaction with awareness.
I want you to do something later, okay? Lie down somewhere, okay? And very slowly, imagine your death, okay? Very slowly, imagine that all your functions are ceasing. All your physical functions, all your senses, your thinking, remembering. Okay, let's just imagine that all is dying. When you get to the end, see what's left. Okay? Good. It's a wonderful practice. So I mean, everybody kind of get the direction. There'll be more teachings, and we'll have lots of time to practice. But this is where things get interesting. Please be, you know, there has to be that curiosity. Right? Curiosity about your own mind, your own experience. What's really going on? What is it? Okay. And you're using this wonderful this capacity of self-awareness of the mind to actually look into the very mind itself. Animals don't have this capacity. That's another reason why this is considered a very precious to be born a human being, because we have this self-reflective capacity. Please use it well to understand your mind. If we want to unfetter our natural mind, we have to understand what it is. We'll stop for now.